1501. Thank you for supporting Ashland Community Radio.
It's the Alternative Show with Trevor Thomas.
Thank you for joining me here tonight. My name is Trevor Thomas, and I am the person who is doing the alternative show, which, to recap, for people that don't know much about me since I just started last week, the alternative show is sort of a variety show. There's a number of different things that I'll be doing, playing some alternative rock, some new age, some metaphysical random stuff here and there. And in addition to that, I'll be doing some really old-time radio shows, Danny Kaye, The Shadow, the Tooth Fairy, a bunch of stuff that I kind of grew up with as a kid and really grew in love with. And I'll also be sprinkling that with some random segments here and there, some local news, some, fake ads, commercial breaks, a bunch of different stuff that I've been wanting to do for a while, just to kind of get familiar with the equipment and try out a few things. So the theme for the day is a little bit darker than what I had last week. Today's theme is life and death. And it's a subject I've been thinking about a lot recently. And I wanted to talk to you guys a little bit about that. So that would be the theme. I'm going to start you out with a song that I used to listen to a lot. It's actually off a soundtrack, which the name escapes me at the moment, so you're just going to have to guess. Yeah. First person to guess correctly wins. I don't know. I'll get back to you on that. So this is Problems by Rappin' Forte. So here we go.
If I sell out, that means I'm copping to a lesser charge. And whenever there's a will, baby, there's a way. Each one teach one, always say the murder rate is rising. Society ain't scaring me. Life is like a puzzle, ain't no telling when they bury me. They wanna tell me how to live, but I got dues to pay. Now how much money you gonna give for my PG&E bill? Cause it's a week late, leave the hustle alone. Fool, don't procrastinate, because I'ma get mine. And that's the way I was taught, fool. And what you thought, that I was born and raised in a big house? While you were asleep up in the bed, I slept on the couch. I tried to study but was often interrupted, because the neighborhood I'm from is so corrupted. Rats and roaches creeping through the cracks in my walls, while my folks down the street breaking plenty laws, trying to count as much as they can count is like hell. It's kinda hard being raised off up in a cell. Get on your own and get you some business, black. Stay sucker free and by all means watch your back. You ain't gotta listen, but take it from your boy Forte. You think you promised another day?
Each piece of life is like a puzzle, can you solve them? Stress it, drive you crazy when you're dealing with these problems.
Problems, problems, how you gonna solve them?
Man, I'm going crazy trying to deal with these problems.
Each and every day on these streets, game is getting sicker. Thicker than a king's eye snicker. And I know who's got the plug. Don't need to witness, cause your business ain't everybody else's business. Snitches and gaffers and gangers, they're so conniving. In 1995, only the strong gon' survive it. Every time I open up something, somebody wants something. So I could be broke, call on my lonesome. Too many critics, too many debaters. And when they don't hire us, that makes me think they hate us. But that's just another problem, cause shoot through my brain. That wouldn't change no matter how much I complain. Why would you care if I was living on welfare? You act like you gon' move me and my family elsewhere. Allow me to make this conversation more concrete. Too many formalities and I find it so obsolete. But I'ma keep striving cause it couldn't get no worse. Ain't robbing no banks or snatching nobody's purse. I finally made me a profit, so now I could really chill. Check my mailbox, scroll through Zoom, there's my phone bill. Trying to look out for number one and that's my mother. If it ain't one thing fly, it's another.
Each piece of life is like a puzzle, can you solve them? Stress about you crazy. Dealing with these problems.
problems, problems, how you gon' solve them?
Man, I'm going crazy trying to deal with these problems. Each piece of life is like a puzzle, can you solve them? Stress or drive you crazy trying to deal with these problems.
Problems, problems, how you gon' solve them?
Man, I'm going crazy trying to deal with these problems.
Problems, problems, how you gon' solve them?
I'ma handle mine.
Problems, problems, how you gon' solve them?
Take them one at a time.
I still can't remember what movie that's from. Okay. The topic for today is life and death. I'm going to start out on the, negative side of that topic. A while ago, I don't know where this came from, but I just started thinking that the chances are that I know someone who has killed someone, which is a very interesting statement, because I can't think of who that would be in my life, but chances are there's someone in my life that has committed that act, whether it's an accident or whether it's on purpose. I don't know. Maybe they don't even know. Maybe they fell asleep at the wheel, hit someone, woke up, and kept driving, not even realizing that it happened. And for some reason, that was just a question that got stuck in my head. I don't know why, but I couldn't stop thinking about it. The idea that somebody I know, and mind you, I live in Ashland, so the concept of that is pretty difficult for me to grasp. Of course, I grew up in Phoenix, Arizona, and I guess that's a little bit easier. But Ashland, it's hard for me to think about something like that being true. But chances are that someone in your life, maybe you already know who it is, has killed someone on accident or on purpose. And I guess the question that I've been asking is, how do you tell? I mean, do people like that lose a piece of themselves in the process? Is there a reason is there a difference, I guess? Is there a difference between people that can do something like that on purpose or even on accident and people that don't? And can you tell the difference? Do they look haunted? Do they feel a little more dead? Is there a piece missing? You know, can you tell? Not to come from a place of fear for any reason. It's just more a place of curiosity. Like, I love Ashland, the fact that I can walk home at night and feel fine with the idea that there's no one out there that's going to do anything to me. I mean, yeah, occasionally there's something that happens around here. The place that I work at got broken into a couple of times, but the person who did it was, I don't know who it was, but you know, they took one thing, I guess the thing that they really needed, left everything else alone. I guess they were kind of nice about it, which I thought was very Ashland. I don't feel the need to lock my car when I go places, except maybe Medford. But, you know, Ashland, drive anywhere. I can leave stuff on the seat, and I feel just fine about that. And yeah, to some degree, that's almost asking for trouble, but I also believe that if you don't put any energy in it, it doesn't really come around and come back to you. I think that it's all in how you think about it. But getting back to the subject, I was also thinking about the idea of psychopaths, maybe because I've been watching a lot of movies recently, like the Batman movies, you know, the Scarecrow from the first one and the Joker from the second one. Very interesting people that don't really have any remorse or guilt about what they do. And so sometimes I wonder, you know, is that something they were born with or something they were taught? And that's a very difficult question to answer. And how do they feel about it? You know, murderers, corrupt politicians, sex offenders, drug dealers. How many of them actually think that they're evil? You know, or evil, you know, by society's definition. I mean, I guess it's very much perspective. You know, I would guess it's less than 1%. It's a very gray area. I mean, it's not like movies or comics where you've got supervillains that are like, oh, yes, I'm going to blow up the planet because I'm evil. It just doesn't happen that way. There's a gray area. People do what they do because they believe they have to survive, or they do it to protect someone. Some people maybe don't even think about it at all. Some people use religion as an excuse, or even atheism, you know. But really, it's all just speculation on my part. It's something that I think about. I like the psychology of people. I like thinking about why people are the way they are, and where their impulses come from, and how it all fits together, kind of like a jigsaw puzzle. But myself, I can't even kill a bug, all right? Living in Phoenix, we had, like, cockroaches and stuff in our garage, and I would try to scare them away, but apparently they like loud noises. They run towards them, and cockroaches, they're just creepy. They move really quickly. So, yeah, so on that subject, when I was a kid, my grandpa took me fishing, made me gut a fish, and that was a little bit traumatizing. I just couldn't stop putting myself in the place of the thing that I was doing that to. I was driving home once, and I hit a deer. A deer just kind of ran off the road, and I guess the front of its head just kind of grazed my right light. Like, it just barely was in time to get nicked by my car. And I didn't see it until it was too late. And I felt so much remorse for that, but I felt worse for, because I was afraid to go up to it. It was just sort of laying there on the side of the road, and it was breathing, and I could see that it was dying, and I wanted to help it through that transition, but I was afraid it would kick me or something. And it's not so much the fact that I hit it, but the fact that I was too afraid to help it that really hurts me, and I guess I'm just that kind of person. Yeah, but, you know, I did kill a deer, but I don't feel any less human because of it. I guess that's really the question, is how you feel about the act, whether or not that makes you missing something. I have a good friend that says that if you're going to be a meat eater, you have to learn to kill what you eat. Since you're going to do it anyway, you should know what it feels like. He is, of course, primarily a vegetarian. Now, I don't entirely agree with that, but I don't disagree either. I think it's a very, very good point that we eat hamburgers, we eat bacon, chicken, all different kinds of stuff, but we have no part in the process of actually slaughtering that animal. We don't know what it feels like. We don't know, we don't know what the cost is for our BLT, basically. And I guess what I truly fear in putting myself in that kind of experience, because he has a point, I should know what that feels like to kill something before I eat it. But I really, truly fear that I would lose respect for life, you know, the respect for life that I have, that I really like. I like having that, but I feel like I would kind of lose it, be a bit desensitized to the idea. Another book I was reading recently, Ishmael, which I love that book, is about society and population and a whole bunch of different things. But one of the really big points that it makes is that we tend to think that this world is here for us. Now, whether or not you believe that, whether or not you're highly religious or any other reason, that's something that's been ingrained in our doctrine. It's a part of who we are as a people. Whether or not we are religious, we seem to believe unconsciously that this world is here for us. It's animals, it's places. You know, we build sidewalks, we build houses, we take up all this room as though it were ours, you know, as though there wasn't anything living here before. And that's an interesting point, and one that I think as a society, maybe we need to look at. I really like the way the Native Americans, and actually even the blue guys in the movie Avatar, which I imagine most people have seen by now, they really have a respect for life. They believe that animals choose to be killed, and they believe that you can bring them to peace by thanking their spirit for their gift, you know, the gift of their flesh and of their sustenance. And I also believe that they feel the same way about themselves. You know, it's like we think dying is such a huge tragedy, and yet if I'm able to die and help something else in the process, you know, be a meal for somebody, or not somebody, but an animal of some kind, or if my death has meaning, then I think that's the most important gift that I can give this planet, a quote from Avatar, which I really like, is all energy is borrowed, and someday you have to give it back. I think that was from Avatar, but I really like that. You know, nothing we do lasts. The only thing we can do is give meaning to our life right now and hope that it will sustain life in the future. And everything falls. History gets lost. Nothing you do will be remembered 1,000 years from now, 100,000, 1,000,000. It's all, that's just how it works. I'm going to take a break for a second here and do a top 10 list, which hopefully I can do a little bit better than last time. Top 10 famous last words and quotes. Person's final words are extremely revealing. These words give a glimpse into the individual's overall feelings and experiences. So, top 10 famous last words and quotes. Number 10, Jack Daniel, 1846 to 1911. His final words were, "One last drink, please." Which, yeah, enough said. Number 9, Dutch Schultz, 1902 to 1935. His last words were, "Hey, Jimmy, the chimney sweeps. Talk to the sword. Shut up. You got a big mouth. Please, come help me up, Henny. Max, come over here. French-Canadian bean soup. I want to pay. Let them leave me alone." I know that means a lot to you guys. He was a New York City area gangster during the 1920s and 30s. Schultz was shot in the head and died at the Palace Chop House in Newark, New Jersey. His dying words were taken down by a police stenographer. Some more of Dutch Schultz's final quotes include, "Mother's the best bet. Don't let Satan draw you too fast. Please crack down on Hitler's commander. The sidewalk was in trouble, and the bears were in trouble, and I broke it up." Number 8, L. Frank Baum, 1856 to 1919. "Now I can cross the shifting sands." L. Frank Baum wrote the Wizard of Oz books, and in his writing, he surrounded the land of Oz by a magical desert. I grew up on those books. Very, very talented person, very imaginative. Number 7, George Harrison of the Beatles, 1943 to 2001. His last words were to his wife, and they were, "Love one another." Number 6, Oscar Wilde, 1854 to 1900. "My wallpaper and I are fighting a duel to the death. One or the other of us has to go." Oscar Wilde was an Irish playwright, poet, and author. He achieved celebrity status in the late 19th century, but suffered a dramatic downfall and was imprisoned for 2 years hard labor after being convicted of homosexual relationships, described as gross indecency with other men. Oscar Wilde died at the Left Bank Hotel, and he maintained a positive attitude until his last moments. Number 5 was Malcolm X, 1925 to 1965. He said, "Brothers, brothers, please, this is a house of peace." Malcolm X was assassinated while giving a speech in Manhattan's Audubon Ballroom. He was speaking to a meeting of the Organization of Afro-American Unity. During his speech, a staged disturbance broke out in the crowd of 400, and as Malcolm and his bodyguards moved to quiet the ruckus, a man rushed forward and shot him in the chest with a sawed-off shotgun. Two other men fired handguns, hitting him 16 times. Reportedly, Malcolm X was dead before his body struck the floor. His final words were an attempt to keep peace in the crowd. Number 4. Bob Marley, 1945 to 1981. "Money can't buy life." His final words were spoken to his son Ziggy. Number 3, Amelia Earhart, 1897 to 1937. "KHAQQ calling Itasca. We must be on you, but cannot see you. Gas is running low. We're on the line 157-337. We will repeat this message. We will repeat this on 6210 kilocycles. Wait." In 1937, Amelia Earhart and Fred Noonan disappeared over the Central Pacific Ocean during an attempt to make a circumnavigational flight of the globe. Many researchers believe that Earhart's airplane ran out of fuel and was ditched at sea. Her final radio correspondence and last words indicated she was close to her destination but could not find it. Number 2, Steve Irwin, 1962 to 2006. Don't worry, they don't usually swim backwards. Which is pretty funny. But also pretty tragic. And I won't stay on that one for too long. Number one is Mozart. 1756 to 1791. He said, "The taste of death is upon my lips. I feel something that is not of this earth." Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart was a prolific and influential composer of the classical era. He composed over 600 works, which many being acknowledged as pinnacles of symphonic, chamber, piano, operatic, and choral music. He's among the most well-known and popular of all classical composers. So, part two of my topic for tonight. Let's see. I forgot where I left off. Part two is, how many people do you know that have saved someone's life? I think that's a very interesting question. How many people do you know that have saved someone's life? So I asked a friend what the second part of my two-part topic should be, because I didn't want it to keep it all completely depressing. And he suggested that, and I think that's a really good point. It takes a certain kind of person to save someone's life. Sometimes it's automatic, sometimes it requires something that a lot of people don't have, and what I think that is a hero complex. And I admire heroes. I am a fan of Superman, Batman, you know, comic books. I kind of grew up with them. I've always loved the idea of being that type of person, that archetype, the person that could just selflessly step in front of something, you know, save a life, whatever. That's what they do. Occasionally I have, I guess, fantasies about somebody breaking into my house and me just, you know, kicking their ass, just being that person. But in a nice way, not like, you know, killing him or anything, but just like, oh, I shot him in the leg or something, or, and then I'm like, you know, teaching him a lesson and stuff. But, I'm not sure if that means there's something incredibly wrong with me. That's just who I am. Going back to comic books, Superman, Batman, these ideologies that we have, these icons that we've grown up with, the people that we look to tell us what's right and wrong. Batman is incredibly popular right now. I mean, his movies are awesome, but he's the really dark, brooding type person. He's the person that's obsessed with something. You know, can't give something up. His parents got murdered. He's got to, you know, seek revenge on people and try to be the person that fixes everything for everyone else, you know, so nobody else's parents will have to die. He's going to stop all the crime in the world. That's his plan. And that seems to call to a lot of people right now. I think people really get that obsession, which is interesting. I personally love Superman. Superman has been my hero since I was a kid. I don't know how to describe him. I guess he's the Boy Scout, you know, he's white bread. He's this perfect ideal of who we are. Technically, he's an alien from another planet, but he has more humanity than any other character out there. He represents what's good about people. And I think people really gel with that. I think that may be a little too simplistic for a lot of people right now, but he's always been my favorite. Which I think is where my kind of hero complex comes from. Because, I mean, the question really is, would you jump in front of a bullet to save someone? That's a big question. I mean, I might. I like to think I would. I have dreams occasionally of fighting a tiger and winning, which I know is incredibly unrealistic. But I may be a little too idealistic to handle myself properly in a situation like that. I think I think in a lot of ways a hero complex is just as twisted as a psychopath, and in an extreme it can be just as destructive. And we love watching movies about people that do the right thing no matter what. You know, the Bruce Willis movies, Die Hard, Lethal Weapon, these people that are in a lot of ways tortured, but their personal life is a shambles, you know, but they're wanting to make up for it in some way, to be the person that saves the day, to fix everything, and they'll give up anything in order to do that. And in a lot of ways, they think that makes, you know, makes up for everything else. They lose their family, their personal lives, everything. This is like the idea of the stoic cop, the person who takes on all the problems himself, doesn't need help, does whatever it takes to get questions answered, and gives nothing back. You know, the detective movies where they're like asking all these questions, and they're all like, answer the question, and then somebody asks them a question, and they don't answer it. It's that type of person that's just, it's a one-sided relationship, giving without receiving. I guess is very much the opposite of the person who kills people, receiving without giving. Very interesting. I think that in a lot of ways, what we should be looking for is balance. There's a lot of shades of gray, and that's where most people live, you know. There's a movie coming out called Kick-Ass, which I think is really funny. It's basically the question of why are there no superheroes? Why hasn't that been done before? But anyone that's seen Watchmen, I mean, I think you kind of understand. These people are really no different than the psychopaths they're trying to kill. They just think they're out to do the right thing. I mean, if you see these kind of movies, you kind of understand that these people are getting the same kind of release, but they think they're doing it from a position of being right. You know, being justified. I mean, Batman and Joker always beating people up and stuff, but Batman thinks it's for a good reason. He's still coming to the same place that these other villains come from. Superheroes and villains, it's really stupid words for this kind of stuff, but I grew up with comic books. Yeah, so they think they're doing the right thing, and I think that can be more dangerous than anything. I mean, how many wars have been fought because one person thought they were right and that someone else was wrong? You know, think of the Holy Crusades, you know, for starters. Kevin Smith has a quote from one of his movies, which I really like. I don't think I have it quite right here, but it's basically, I think it's better to have ideas. You can change an idea. Changing a belief is trickier. You know, people die for their beliefs, but an idea, you know, you don't kill people for ideas.
Times have come. together in eternity. 40,000 men and women every day. Another 40,000 every day. So come on, baby, take my hand. We'll be able to fly. Cause baby, I'm baby, I'm your man. Love.
Dangerous Minds. I finally figured out what it was that the movie was that one song that I played so long ago was from. Dangerous Minds. So sorry, you guys don't win anything, but that's the soundtrack. I'm going to go a little bit of a different direction here now. We've kind of done the depressing stuff. I'm going to move into something a little bit more upbeat. So I will just go ahead and start, and hopefully you guys like it.
And now for something completely different!
Son of a... Oh, God. Monday morning traffic. Oh, I wonder what's on the radio.
Just reached the end of 14 classic hits in a row. And we'll be right back after we...
Send Bill Doberman to Congress! Because Bill Doberman agrees with us! Bill Doberman! It's a name we can trust! Bill Doberman! It's a name we can remember! Let's write it down! Bill!
Just heard 19 uninterrupted classic hits. And now for this...
verbal traffic backup caused by the... evil that come down and dwelleth amongst them. And it did causeth their eyeballs to ooze a new substance, and it was... a greenish color, but they did not fear, for they knew it that the
$9,000
but Toyota, Chevrolet, Opel, Isuzu, Ford, Renault, Jeep, Chrysler, Toyota, Studebaker, Tucker, Honda wants to give you, for no good reason, Bill Doberman. He'll work for you. He'll fight for you. If people are rude to you, Bill Doberman will kill them. Bill Doberman.
Enjoy these 54 classic hits in a row. And now let's pause while...
Insects did swarm upon them and did eat their children. But they were not afraid, for they trusted him in the...
Listening audience. Hello?
Hello?
Go ahead.
Steve?
This is Steve. Go ahead.
Am I on?
Yes. Go ahead.
Is this Steve?
This is Bill Doberman. And I say convicted rapists have no business serving on the Supreme Court. That's why, as your congressman, I'll make sure that...
A large quantity of nuclear waste has been spilled on the interstate, and police are trying to... Give you $17,000 in trade for anything. It doesn't even have to be a car. Bring us a roadkill, we don't care. Bring us a cantaloupe-sized gob of earwax. Bring us huge creatures that were like winged snakes, except they had great big suckers, which did cometh and pulleth their limbs from their sockets like this. But they were not afraid. Nay, they were joyous, for they had...
Just heard 317 uninterrupted classic hits. And now...
Bill Doberman will shrink your swollen membranes. Bill Doberman has
glowing bodies strewn all over the road. Motors are going to need
$40,000. We'll just give it to you for no reason. We have a brain disorder. Late at night, sometimes we see these giant grubs with faces like Kitty Carlisle. And we hear these voices saying...
Steve?
Yes.
Steve?
Yes.
Steve?
Yes, and their eyeballs did explode like party favors. But they were not sorrowful, for they knew it.
Bill Doberman, him good. Him heap strong. Him your father, him...
Finished playing 3,814 consecutive classic hits, with no commercial interruptions, dating back to 1978, and now...
Radiation cloud is spreading rapidly, and we have unconfirmed reports that...
Liquefied brain parts did dribbleth out from their nostrils, but they were not alarmed, for they were...
Getting sleepy, very sleepy. When you hear the words, Bill Doberman, you will...
I think I'll just sit here in silence. Southern Oregon Jobs with Justice proudly supports KSKQ LP 94.9 FM in Ashland, Oregon. Southern Oregon Jobs with Justice brings together labor unions, religious organizations, congregations, student groups, and community organizations to improve working people's standard of living, job security, and their right to organize. Visit their website at www.sojwj.org. KSKQ thanks Southern Oregon Jobs with Justice for supporting community radio. So, I'm just going to jump right into the Danny Kaye Show, which we're continuing where we left off yesterday. This next episode is the story of his life. So, without further ado, I'm going to jump right in there.
This is the Danny Kaye Show with Eve Arden, Lionel Stander, yours truly Ken Niles, and the outstanding music of America's top band, Harry James and his music makers. Pabst Blue Ribbon, 33 fine brews blended into one great beer, presents 33 fine talents blended into one great comedian, Danny Kaye.
Come on, Danny. Danny Kaye, will you hurry up?
Oh, just a minute, Evie.
It's always just a minute with you. Come on.
Oh, now wait. I must pause to greet an old friend. Ah, greetings, old friend. I know things are pretty tough now, old pal. And yes, once you were popular, in the money, but now you're broke, desolate, deserted, alone. But don't worry, old pal. You'll make a comeback someday.
Danny, do you have to go through that act every time you pass a cigarette machine?
But, Evie, they worry me. Standing around doing nothing, I wonder if they could put bananas in them.
You worry about everything but the things you should. Now, sit down here and read your radio fan mail. It's got to be answered.
Oh, boy, fan mail? You mean I really got fan mail?
That's what I've been trying to tell you all day.
Gosh, how many letters did I get?
Think of a number.
One.
Bingo, now read it.
Gosh, my first fan letter. I feel like a bride.
Well, brush the orange blossoms out of your eyes and read it.
Okay. It says, big money in Belgian hares. Put a couple of our giant Belgians in your backyard and they'll soon be paying the rent for you. Send for our free booklet, Splitting Hairs. Just what I thought, Evie. The only people listening to me last week were rabbits.
Well, it's a start. Oh, hello, Lionel.
Hi, Lionel.
Look what I got for you, Danny. A whole bushel basket full of letters. Ain't it wonderful?
For me, Lionel? No kidding?
Yeah. This is definite evidence and testimony that the American public have taken their collective pens in hand and inscribed their felicitations and congratulations for posterity. Sic transit gloria de haven.
Ooh, all this mail. Let's see what they say. Here's one from Tootsie Smith of Evansville, Indiana. Blue Ribbon Program, please send me photographs of Harry James and Ken Niles. They are my dream men. Danny Kaye is kind of cute, too, so have him lick the envelope.
Well.
Say, Danny, here's one I think you better read yourself.
Okay, let's see it. Says, dear Danny Kaye, heard your show last Saturday night, and I laughed and laughed and laughed. Gee, that's swell. I laugh all the time. I guess I'll never get out of this place.
Hey,
well,
hey.
Harry James!
Come on in, Harry.
Oh, hello, Harry. Hello, everybody.
Pull up a trumpet and sit down, Harry. I was just looking over my fan mail from the first show. Say, did you get any letters, Harry?
Yeah, I got one, but I feel kind of silly reading it.
Oh, go on, read it, Harry.
Well, okay. Dear Maestro, besides being a fine musician, you are a great personality. You have the charm of a Boyer and the appeal of a Van Johnson. Sincerely, B.G.
B.G.? B.G., could that possibly be Betty Grable?
Well, it ain't Benny Goodman, brother.
Say, Harry, here's a legitimate fan letter for you. It asks for you, the boys, and Kitty Callan to do the new Columbia recorded arrangement of I'm Beginning to See the Light.
That was mighty nice, Harry. Mighty nice.
Hey, would any of you be interested in a fan letter I just got from our sponsor?
From our sponsor? Oh, what does it say?
Well, here, I'll read it. It says, Dear Mr. Niles, just a few lines to let you know how much I enjoyed the show last week. When you said Pabst Blue Ribbon is more than just another beer, it is the blended beer, full flavor blended from no less than 33 fine brews, it sent a tingle up and down my spine.
Yes, but Ken, does he say anything about me?
Well, I'm coming to that, Danny. Mr. Niles, when you said the Pabst Blue Ribbon process of full flavor blending ensures the even goodness and depth of flavor that sets this famous beer apart, I just quivered with excitement.
Oh, you poor kid. But doesn't he say anything about me?
I'm coming to that, Danny. Mr. Niles, when you said order it with confidence, serve it with pride, for no matter where you go, there is no finer beer, no finer blend than Pabst Blue Ribbon, my ecstasy knew no bounds. Sincerely yours.
Is that the end of the letter? Well, doesn't he say anything about me?
Well, of course, Danny, you don't think he'd ignore you. Here it is. P.S. Who is Danny Kaye?
Who is Danny Kaye? Who is Danny Kaye? Who is Danny Kaye?
Ladies and gentlemen, anticipating this dilemma and by way of enlightenment, we proudly present The Life of Danny Kaye. Or From the Cradle to Sam Goldwyn. Or A Kaye Grows in Brooklyn. This soggy, sagging saga all begins on a cold, stormy January night many years ago when, riding through the blizzard high above the rooftops of Brooklyn, two storks are flying on their nightly round. What are these two storks saying? Listen.
Hiya, stork.
Hiya, stork. What are you carrying?
Babies. What else?
Yeah, babies, babies. Always babies.
Yeah. I wonder where they come from.
Hey, I don't know, but I know where mine are going to. I'm on my way to California with a set of twins for one of my best customers, a guy named Crosby. Who you got?
Oh, I got a little blonde, skinny drip named Danny Kaye.
You know, I'm getting sick of being a stork.
Me too. I wish I was a penguin. Then I could go out in a tuxedo once in a while.
Yeah.
Well, good luck on your trip to California, pal. Here's where I have to land.
Stork to Brooklyn Hospital. Stork to Brooklyn Hospital. Coming in for a landing.
Hospital to Stork. Hospital to Stork. What have you got?
Stork to hospital. I got a kid named Danny Kaye.
Hospital to Stork. Is this trip necessary?
Now, far below in the hospital, we go to a corridor outside the maternity ward where many anxious fathers are pacing up and down.
Fathers! Oh, one, two. Ease, you nervous wrecks. Mr. Thomas Kaye, step forward.
Oh, if my wife only knew what I've gone through.
Wake up, Doc. Well, I am happy to tell you that you are the father of an 8-pound boy.
Wonderful, a boy. 8 pounds. How much do I owe you, Doc?
That'll be $25 and 17 red points.
And so a Kaye was born in Brooklyn, and it wasn't long before his proud father went into the nursery and found his high chair in a shambles, his blocks in disarray, and his nurse on the chandelier.
Well, well, our boy must be growing up. Guess he ought to be bright enough to talk by now. Come on, Danny boy. Say da 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 daddy. Come on. Kick-kick-kick-kick-coo. Say da-da.
Have a voice. Have to go to get it to the good bones.
And so the first famous words of Danny Kaye, "Get my nurse off the chandelier," were heard around the world. Not many years pass before our favorite problem child is rushing off to school.
Quiet, children. Quiet.
That's better. Well, good morning, children.
Good morning, teacher.
Who made that noise? Lionel Standard, did you do that?
Teacher, I cannot tell a lie. It was Harry James.
Squealer! Squealer!
Squealer! Harry James. Harry James, for blowing that horn, you will stay after school for 2 hours.
Okay, but it'll cost you time and a half. I got a union.
School days, school days. Give a dough, give a day.
Yeah, well, Danny Kaye. Danny Kaye.
We're taking a dough, give a dough. We're having a half a day. Danny Kaye. Danny Kaye.
Why are you always so late to class, Danny?
You start too early.
Now, come, come. That's no excuse. What made you late this morning?
Well, before I go to school, I have to wheel out my baby brother Birdie in his baby buggy. This morning, I was wheeling Birdie in his baby buggy when the bumper of the baby buggy behind bumped into Birdie's baby buggy's bumper. Well, when the rubber bumpers bumped the baby into the buggy behind, tore the rubber off Birdie's baby buggy's bumper, and without the rubber, the bumper's bump was even bumpier. So I had to unbump the buggies and put the rubber back on Birdie's baby buggy's bumper, and that's why...
All right, Danny Kaye, take your seat behind Lionel. Lionel Sander, why are you wearing your hair in a point?
I just got my head caught in a pencil sharpener.
Really? Well, we will now have geometry. Harry James, what is the Pythagorean proposition?
That's neck, babe.
Wrong. Danny Kaye, what is the Pythagorean proposition?
I'm with Harry.
Lionel, are you with Harry and Danny?
Nah, I hate crowds.
Well, perhaps I'm being too optimistic. Does anybody here know the alphabet?
Oh, I know.
I know. Danny and Harry, you may both do it. Now stand up in front of the class. Not on your head. All right, boys.
Thank you.
A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O.
Play it good.
L, M, N, O, P, Q, R, T.
A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P, L, M, N, O, P, Q, R, S, T, U. W-X-Y-Z.
Harry J.
Yes, teacher.
Danny K.
Yes, teacher.
You better learn the alphabet, learn it right, or I'll keep you in the classroom all night.
A, B, C.
Got the teacher jumping.
A, B, C.
Got the teacher rocking.
A, B, C.
Got the teacher jiving.
A, B, C.
Teacher, is it square? To me stinky.
Well, so much for Danny in the fourth grade. Time passed, but he didn't. So now we come to another milestone in the life of Danny Kaye. We find him standing in the shade of the old Brooklyn Bridge, awaiting his first date.
Yoo-hoo, Danny!
Yoo-hoo, Hortense.
Well, here I am, Tuesday night, 8:15.
Yeah, Tuesday night, 8:15.
Have you been waiting long?
No, just since Sunday. Look what I got for you, Horty.
Oh, that's beautiful, Danny. What is it?
A real umpire skull from the Brooklyn ballpark.
Next to my heart. Oh, Danny.
Yes.
Don't you want to hold my hand?
Is anybody looking?
Uh-uh.
All right, take off your glove. Gee, Horty, this is living.
Danny.
Yes.
Don't you want to kiss me?
Kiss you? Gosh.
Well, if you're bashful, then I'll kiss you.
Oh, you better not, Horty. Oh, darn it, Horty. Now you've done it.
Oh, what?
You blew a hole in my bubble gum.
Romantic? Uh-huh. Just the two of us alone under the Brooklyn Bridge.
Pardon me, kids. My name is Steve Brody. You got a towel?
Despite this historic interruption to his first romance, Danny Kaye later found his real love was show business. And after many heartbreaks, struggles, and reverses, he made his first appearance before the public.
All right, folks, now step right up. Now, for the benefit of you gents who haven't seen this demonstration before, step up a little closer. Get out of here, boys. You bother me. Yes, sir. Why, if any of you gents got a wife, mother, or sister home who has trouble getting the tops off bottles, why, step right up and buy the little lady a Jim Dandy bottle opener. Yes, sir, the one I use is the one I sell. 5 cents, a nickel, a half a dime, will neither make or break or set you up in business. Yes, sir, now for the demonstration, folks. I have here in my right hand the Jim Dandy bottle opener. With my left hand, I pick at random a bottle of Pabst Blue Ribbon beer.
Hey, just a minute, mister. Nobody picks a bottle of Pabst Blue Ribbon beer at random. Everybody knows that Pabst Blue Ribbon is not just beer, it's the blended beer.
Get away from me, boy, you bother me.
Why, Pabst Blue Ribbon has that clear golden color, that one-in-a-million flavor that comes from blending never less than 33 separate fine brews.
Say, get lost, will you? I'm working this side of the street.
Well, be it on this side of the street or the other side, the fact is that the only way to appreciate the smooth, even goodness of Pabst is to taste it yourself. Order it with confidence, serve it with pride. But no matter where you go, there is no finer beer, no finer blend than Pabst Blue Ribbon. Jim Dandy bottle openers faded into oblivion, but Danny Kaye kept forging ahead until he finally landed on Broadway, the theater. It is the opening night of a famous Broadway play. Act One has received a tremendous ovation. Act Two has caused a roar of cataclysmic approval. And now in Act Three, Danny Kaye makes his bid for lasting theatrical fame in the following tense and gripping scene.
This is the end, Roland. The end. We're through, do you understand? Definitely through.
Oh, but Martha, you can't. You simply can't do this.
No, Martha, you can't. You simply can't. Oh, Roland, we've been all through this before.
But Martha, give me another chance.
No.
Just, please, just one more chance.
No.
Oh, yes, Martha, do give him one more chance.
Young man.
Who, me?
Yes, you, sitting there in the front row. Will you keep out of this?
From that point on, Danny Kaye's career in show business was mediocre.
Meteoric, Ken. Never makes a mistake when he reads a commercial.
Meteoric.
Yes.
As a result of his Broadway success, a nearsighted talent scout persuaded Danny to come to Hollywood. No sooner did he get off the bus than he found himself in the middle of the Sam Goldwyn production, Up in Arms, where Danny scored his greatest success. He now brings you part of the score. All right, you're on, Danny.
Thank you, Ken. And for those of you who didn't see the picture, this is the scene in the lobby of the movie theater where I was explaining to Danny Shore that all musical pictures are alike. Suppose you do get into the theater, and suppose you do get a seat, and suppose the woman in front does take her hat off, and you do get a look at the screen. What do you see?
Manic Depressive Pictures present...
Rolls!
Hello, Fresco! Produced by our Umanic and directed by Depressive.
Now you know the name of the picture and you'd like to see it. But no. Screenplay by Gluck, from a stage play by Motz, from a story by Blip, from a chapter by Ronk, from a sentence by Dokes, from a comma by Stokes, from an idea by Grokes, based on a Joe Miller's jokes. Now you know the name of the picture and who wrote it, and you'd still like to see it. But now... Plot direction, Finker Puff Interior, Yes, Minerva Bump Photography, Alonzo Tech Recorded Sound, as Needleback Upholstery, by Zachary McNackery, by Thackeray, by Chickery, by Dickery, and Dickery, by Doc. Now, finally, at last, comes the picture. And what do we see? The same old beautiful chorus girls. The opening scene is a ranch in Fresno, California. So what are they singing?
When it's cherry blossom time in Orange, New Jersey, I will make a peach of a pear. I know we can't alone, so honey, do be mine. And if...
Up from the gulch rides a hunk of man. He is a hero, cowboy Dan, a galloping, yodeling buckaroo. His horse, of course, is a baritone, too.
I've got that old wagon wheel inside of me.
The girls are delighted to hear this. But where is our heroine? As the bell rings for lunch, we find a heroine in the corral eating a hard out. She is Mary Sue Ann, tap-dancing daughter of an American juggling actor left on the doorstep of an old English castle where she was found by Sir Basil Metabolism, who said,
By Jove, a girl baby! I shall raise her
which she did. But she wants to tap dance a cowboy Dan who she met on this trip and who was love at first sight, wants to marry her so she can tap dance, but she knows that Basil will never permit this. Never, never, never!
That's why she is eating her heart out.
But through her tears, she is singing a happy little song because she is also a coloratura soprano. Is beside herself. Her favorite position.
Oh, Mama, you must let me marry Cowboy Dan. He owns the biggest ranch in Texas, bar none.
Bar none? Why, that's the password of the FBI.
It can't be. No, no, yes, yes, no, no, yes, yes, no, no, yes, yes, no, yes, no, no, yes, yes, it can't be.
But it was.
He rushes to Mary Sue Ann. Mary Sue Ann, you must help me. Can you tap out a message in code? This is a big chance. Now she can tap dance, which she does. But what has she done? She has betrayed her own father. But he isn't her father. He is Heinrich by Schloop and by Goldesblum and Heidner the Goldesblum. Home to the Goldesblum and to the full home. To the good and to the home. Fine. The dangerous German spy. Stick up your hands, you dirty rat, and I'll display an item that's... the FBI finally captured the German spy. Dan and Mary are about to blend. You think the picture's about to end?
But now...
Who ever heard of a musical picture without Carmelita Pepita? The Bolivian bombshell.
I wish you could come with me to my little village in Bolivia, where every night all the little people... All they want to sing is...
When it's cherry blossom time in Orange, New Jersey, we'll make a peach of a pen.
I'm going to cut us off right there. I apologize. We're not going to be able to hear the rest of that. Running a little bit low on time, so I think we're just going to cut that there and move on to the ending, which is a little segment I like to call Spell Speak. So here we go. Hopefully you have your pencils ready. I'm going to do it fast once, then I'm going to do it slow right afterwards so that you can hear it again. Here we go. A BIRDINHANDMAKESHARDTO. okay, one more time. A BIRDINHANDMAKESHARDTOBLOWNOSE, period. So, A BIRDINHANDMAKES. MAKESHARDTOBLOWNOSE. Hopefully you can decipher that. There'll be another one next week and every following week. Thank you for listening to my show. Tune in next week, same time, same place. We'll be talking about Avatar and why it's such a good movie. Also talking about the underlying message of the movie, which is a perfect segue from the message that we are talking about today, or did talk about today. Yeah, thank you very much for listening.
I'm making a note here, huge success. It's hard to overstate my satisfaction. Aperture science. We do what we must because we can. For the good of all of us, except the ones who are dead. But there's no sense crying over every mistake. You just keep on trying till you run out of cake. And the science gets done and you make a neat plan for the people who are still alive. I'm not even angry. I'm being so sincere right now. Even though you broke
Show, which would not be possible without substantial donations from Antiseptic and Earl E. Bird, created by Aaron Tyers and Billy Club, with producer Terry Cloth, editor May Baleen, our research team of Barbara Blacksheep and Shirley U. Jess, librarian Anita Honjob, production coordinator Matt Tress, studio engineers Idaho and Randy Peters. Special thanks to Howie Kisses, High Marks, Phil R. Monick, Harry P. Ness, Hugh Suck, and my good friend Richard Tease, patent lawyer Meg O'Tun, Mary Kay cosmetic saleswoman Doris Close, and of course our French teacher Mademoiselle Viva La France. A very special thanks to Al Gore for inventing the internet, without which this nearly live streaming broadcast would not be possible. This show is broadcast live on location at Walt Disney's Tomorrowland theme park in Disneyland, France.
Et la piscine dans le Disneyland Resort. C'est plus beau, magnifique!
Featuring the host with the most, Trevor S. Thomas, and yours truly, Alan Wrench. You're listening to KSKQ 94.9 FM, Ashland Radio, a product of the Multicultural Association of Oregon. Thank you, and good night. We're too busy singing.